tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So we've been in retreat now for almost 2 months, and a very important part of the practice is learning how to balance the mind, balance the energy, balance the way that we're approaching our practice, and also kind of balancing the way that we are able to both settle and still the mind, or at least try to, and bringing up reflections, investigations, contemplations, so that we're using the our attention and directing our thought in a way that both helps to encourage and uplift the mind, but also to make the practice kind of more immediate or fresh or having that sense of certain sharpness within the mind. Of course, one of the most common and powerful contemplations and recollections that the Buddha has us do is a contemplation of death. And this is really very important to be willing to bring this up for contemplation. Sometimes there can be a certain resistance to contemplating death, or a certain fear as well, that maybe it's just going to bum me out and undermine all sense of purpose. But that's not really how it works, because fundamentally it's just contemplating the way things are, and when we see things in their true nature and understand the true nature of things, then things become a lot clearer for us, a lot more simple in a way. When you get a clearer picture of the reality of what we're coming up against. And death is it's just that basic. It's just a reality, and there's a necessity to see that clearly. But when we see things really clearly, in the same way that say if one is traveling on a road at night, especially in the countryside like this, then it's helpful to have a good set of headlights, good high beams that you can really see what's coming. It was last week, I guess, I've been getting a ride up in the EV with Ajahn Kruna Dhammo, and the headlights weren't working, so sort of hanging out the front with a flashlight on the outside, trying to see. We made it, but you didn't really see that clearly what was coming. The clearer that one can see, then the safer it is, the easier it is, the more at ease one can be. And so that's part of the contemplation of death, is this is a reality. This is what is the it's in our path in our life. This is what we have to look forward to. To be able to see that clearly. So, and when it's seen clearly, then it's not problematic. The Buddha had a conversation with a Brahmin, a Janusoni, and he's a well known figure at the time of the Buddha, Brahman, and he was in conversation with the Buddha, and he sort of said, "Yeah, I don't think there's anybody that doesn't have a fear of death, and death has a certain fear and dread of death." And the Buddha said, "Well, there's." And of course, the way it is, it's kind of wonderful to watch the way the Buddha's mind works, how he analyzes things. They say, "Well, there's causes and conditions for fear of death, and there's people who fear death there's reasons for that, and there's people who don't fear death, and there's reasons for that, and of course they're the same thing but opposite." And so that the Buddha explains that one who has no fear of death is somebody who he gave four different conditions or aspects, and one who has abandoned desire, craving, and delight toward sensuality is able to live without fear of death. One who has abandoned desire, craving, and delight toward the body would live without fear of death. One who has lived in a way that have cultivated the good and wholesome actions, and have relinquished the unwholesome, unskillful, evil actions. That would be a cause for living without fear of death. And the last condition that the Buddha pointed to is that one is free from doubt and has doubt and perplexity about what is the true Dhamma, what is the nature of truth, and has attained to a certainty about what is the nature of true Dhamma, of truth. So that these are the causes and conditions that the Buddha points to for not having any kind of fear or sense of worry about death. And of course it is. I think John Soni is speaking quite rightly in the sense of that the vast majority of human beings do have either perplexity, fear, uncertainty about death, and there's a mystery there. There's an uncertainty. There's a kind of concern. You know, what is it? What's going to happen? But that makes it even more important to contemplate and to investigate. Because the reality is that whether one fears death or doesn't fear death, it's going to one's going to experience it, and it's better to be prepared, better to have a clarity within oneself. And that's where the Buddha has us investigating the nature of certainty of death, and it's actually pretty basic, simple, in that you breathe in, you don't breathe out, that's it, or you breathe out and don't breathe in again, and that's how close we are to death. We tend to project it into the future of some kind of off in the distance somewhere. I'll have to deal with it. There's a kind of, we have nice ideas of how we'd like it to happen, sort of have it all under our control, be fully conscious and slip away peacefully into our death, and statistically that isn't how it happens. There's a whole range of what the experience of death is like, and because we're comes to mind is this thing. Of course, Woody Allen's got the best quotes around death. One of them is, I'm not afraid of dying. I just don't want to be there when it happens. So there is that kind of separation, which makes it even more essential to really be contemplating the nature of the body, the inevitability of death. As we contemplate the nature of the body, and how we with the identification that we have with the body. Is the biggest thing in terms of our separation from the familiar life force that runs in the body. But even that is kind of looks at it closely, one realizes that the body is actually you know, it's not that familiar. You know, we have assumptions about the body, but the reality of it is quite different. And I guess I was reading somewhere that there was over a quarter of the cells in the body are actually not even human cells. You know, we carry around all these different kinds of bacterias and different kind of flora and cells that are existing, dependent on the body. Millions, trillions of different kind of cells within the digestive tract. It's huge, and it's all not particularly, human. They rely on the human body. Or one of the kicker for me was when we were coming across these little mites that have adapted to living in eyelashes. ooh, I didn't think that was part of the deal. There's all these different life forms that are coexisting with what we think is my body, and then even when the body dies. Much of the process of the decomposition of the body is actually it's already taking place within us already. It's just that the life force is such that it's building and rebuilding and staving off the decomposition of the body, so once the breath stops the whole process decomposition that's already taking place, it just sort of explodes, and body starts to break down. And of course, that's one of the contemplations that the Buddha encourages. That is quite difficult, if not impossible, to see here in the West, is the charnel ground contemplations, beginning with the initial death of a body, and then to see the body beginning to decompose, starting to become food for many different the different life forms that were already existing within the body, but then also in the Buddha's time, and of course they were charnel grounds, were actual places that were outside a village, and then the different animals would also come to. Birds come to feed on them, on the body, on the human body. And and of course, that's again the nature of the human body being this composition of fundamental elements, elements of nature that just go back to nature, and it's really important to, you know, to be contemplating that reality or that perspective of the fact that what we call me as a human body and the elements that make up the human body, they're the same fundamental elements, building blocks that all of nature is composed of. And so that follows the course of nature, and the course of nature is that which is arisen, establishes itself for a while, and then it passes away. So whether it's a mind moment, or a breath coming in or going out, or whether it's a human body being born and then passing away over a period of however many years, a universe coming into being and passing away. It's all following the same fundamental nature, the nature of inconstancy, the nature of change, and the nature of arising and ceasing. And of course, that's when we reflect or recollect the Buddha's first teaching, and then the insight that allowed Kundanya to be the first person to enter the stream of Dhamma, to enter the stream, the first being to awaken to the truth that the Buddha was pointing to. That truth is very simple. That yang kinchi samudhiya dhammang sambandhang nirodha dhammang. Whatever is of the nature to arise, all that is of the nature to cease. And it's a fundamental truth. It's a fundamental reality. And whether it's internal or external, whether it's what one considers belonging to me or belongs to something else, whether it's coarse or refined, that's just the very nature of things. So that being able to investigate that, being able to recollect that, being able to pay attention to that. And of course, death is one that grabs our attention, as well it should, because it one is just the complete uncertainty of death. It doesn't it doesn't announce itself ahead of time, and then even when we're born, we don't come into the let's say, into this human form with a kind of a warranty slip or anything as to how long it's supposed to last. We really don't know. So it's essential that we reflect on it, pay attention to it. Because there's a certain feeling of urgency that needs to be aroused, that death facilitates, but it's also there's a real peacefulness and coolness within the heart that comes from when you really realize I'm really getting down to the truth of the matter. I'm really getting down to the kind of the nitty gritty of things. I'm not trying to sugarcoat anything. I'm not trying to get out of the reality of existence. I'm not trying to get out of the reality of what practice entails. So that there's a real satisfying quality to that, and because you know when we contemplate deeply, then we realize there's a confidence that comes when we recognize that we're not we're not fooling ourselves, we're not deflecting our attention into things that are extraneous, and also in the sense of that coolness and peacefulness and confidence that comes with that contemplation of death, there's a, it's one of the main things that connects us to all other beings, in that sense that when we recognize that we're in the same plight, we face the same difficulties. There's no exceptions. So there's a lot more patience and kindness and compassion when that contemplation is really held clearly, it's a natural response. It's hard to look in a way that is propping up, a sense of a division or conflict or a sense of who's better, who's worse, who's equal. All of that is so kind of in the light of that contemplation of death, all of that is just so pathetic and shallow, actually. Looking on that in a demeaning way. It's just that it's not worth it. It drops away, and what is left is a sense of a real care and compassion and clarity. So The contemplation of death is not just some kind of bitter pill that you have to swallow. It's an actual a lifting up of truth in order to clear away the dross and to allow one to not clutter the heart and the practice with things that are really unnecessary, unessential, take away the opportunity to dwell in true wisdom and goodness. So seeing things in their true light, seeing things in their true nature. And just recognizing how the sense of things being elemental. These are, we don't have the ability to control in the way that we would like. We don't have the ability we have to accept the nature of things following just how the coming together of elements, their establishing and then their dissolution. Ajahn Chah gives compares the image of the human body to it's like a block of ice. I think it looks really solid and takes up some space but you put a block of ice, it doesn't matter how big it is, you put a block of ice out, especially in tropical country, it just starts melting and it starts dissipating and it starts dissolving. And after not too long a time, it's gone. And that's exactly what happens to us as human beings. It's not, even if we live for 70, 80, 90 years, 100 years, it's actually not that long. I think for myself, I'm 63, and then just thinking back on my life and saying, that wasn't so long. It's past, who knows how much longer I have. It's held together for a while, but it's definitely melting. So that's the same for all of us. The elements come together and they take a certain shape. And then they dissipate. Ajahn Chah also used that image of in the same way that say like a house or a building. We build it and we think we own it, think it's ours. And of course, you build a building and then other beings start, move into it, sort of the spiders and mice and rats that move into it. You think, hey, wait a minute, this is mine. Ajahn Jodhi Paul, how many rats are you taking out of your kuti?
Six.
Six, yeah. So you think they're all done yet?
No.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, so this is my kuti. But you know, it's not. It's just part of nature. And you think, you build something, create something, and the other aspects of nature move in or coexist with it, and then it starts to fall apart, to dissipate. And so Ajahn Chah sort of say, yeah, you don't, it's just like, you don't, if we think of this as our home, well, it's not our real home. So if this is just something that we're, he says, we don't own it, it's like we're renting it. We're just renters. And we'll be, lease is up, but we have to go. So we don't own the body, can't control it, can't force it to be the way that we want it. And certainly this winter retreat, or this past year, really, with the numbers of people who've been laid up with knees and hips and operations and odds and ends, and they're definitely don't. If it were really our body, it wouldn't have to be hobbling around in crutches or sitting on benches, and for sitting on chairs, or for myself, and be able to go for a walk around the loop trail rather than not being restricted. So that it's just contemplating the nature of the body. And then putting it in that context of contemplation of death, and again, it's not in order to be a negative perception. It's just this is the way things are, and when we have what we have, so we need to look after it. So looking after it in as skillful a way as possible, and one of the qualities that the Buddha encouraged as a fundamental quality for cultivation and development of the path is a quality of heedfulness, an appamada, heedfulness, circumspection, an attentive care. I mean, it could be translated in different ways, but that sense of being very attentive and clear, seeing things in their true nature. And the Buddha says in one discourse that in the same way that when one sees the changing of the reddening of the sky in the at the end of the night, then one knows that the new day is dawning. In the same way, when one sees the quality of apamada, of heedfulness or circumspection in the heart, then one sees and has confidence that the Noble Eightfold Path is arising within one. So this quality of heedfulness relies on directing our attention to the things that support that clarity and clear vision of the true nature of things. And so I'll offer that for reflection this evening.